Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, March 2nd, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Second Death Reported in Ottawa Tornado, by Kevin Barlow. Bloomington. Cleanup and damage assessment continued Wednesday after Tuesday's violent storms that spawned at least 24 tornadoes across Illinois and reportedly killed 4 people in the Midwest, including 2 Ottawa men. The National Weather Service said late Wednesday the tornado that roared through Ottawa and the small village of Naplate packed winds up to 155 miles per hour, making it an EF3 on the Enhanced Fujita scale. Chicago CBS affiliate WBBM reported late Wednesday night that a second Ottawa man has died of injuries suffered when a tree fell on him and another man. Authorities previously confirmed that an uprooted tree killed Wayne Tuntland, 76. WBBM reported that DJ Johnson, 31, was crushed by the same tree while pushing a third man to safety. OSF St. Elizabeth Medical Center in Ottawa reported treating 16 patients after the storm that damaged dozens of structures in Ottawa and neighboring Naplate, including the LaSalle County Nursing Home in Ottawa. The types of injuries we have received include fractures and injuries to the head, knee, and arm areas, said hospital spokeswoman Libby Allison in an email. Several injuries were the result of falling tree limbs and the inability of drivers to see as they tried to travel home. 2 patients were transferred to OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Peoria, where one was listed in critical condition and the other in good condition. It was unknown late Wednesday if Johnson was one of these patients. 1 patient was admitted overnight at the Ottawa Hospital and then released Wednesday. The others, including 2 patients who came to the emergency room on Wednesday, were treated and released. About a quarter of the roughly 200 homes in Naplate were damaged, Fire Chief John Nevins said. Debbie Luffridge, 61, and her son were inside their Naplate home riding out the storm in the bathtub. Firefighters rescued them after the roof was torn off. All I heard was the wind and the breaking glass, like an explosion of glass, Luffridge said. Representatives from the McLean County Emergency Management Agency were ready to respond when the tornadoes hit both to the north and south of McLean County about 5 p.m. Tuesday, said Director Bob Clark. We were watching everything and were ready for deployment if necessary, but we never got the call, he said. It was an interesting situation. There were issues to the north and to the south, but we also had to keep in mind that another wave was going to arrive a few hours later. But fortunately, we weren't needed. The Weather Service has confirmed 24 tornadoes in Illinois from Tuesday's storms, including one that touched down about 5:30 p.m. in Washburn in Woodford County, but left no injuries. NWS Storm Prediction Center meteorologist Patrick Marsh said crews are still determining how many twisters touched down across Arkansas, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Missouri. We knew McLean County was a moderate risk for severe weather, but it was just good luck that the system went to the north and south, said Weather Service meteorologist Kirk Hudel. There was some hail at about 11 p.m., along with some strong winds, but no major damage reported. Marsh said a strong storm system moved from the mountain west and collided with warm and humid air in the Midwest, which has enjoyed an unusually warm winter, and where temperatures Tuesday were well into the 70s in many places. That's why we saw storms more representative of late March and April, Marsh said. The atmosphere doesn't care what the calendar says. In southern Illinois, an apparent tornado near the town of Crossville, near the Wabash River, killed a 71-year-old man and injured his wife, White County Coroner Chris Marsh said. In Missouri, a twister blew several vehicles off of Interstate 55 near Perryville, 65 miles southeast of St. Louis. A 24-year-old man from Perryville was thrown from one of the vehicles and died, Missouri State Highway Patrol Corporal Justin Wheatley said. The weather, which damaged 110 homes there and left 12 people injured, was so strong that it lifted crumpled cards from a nearby salvage yard and tossed them along the highway. American Red Cross volunteers were in several counties, including LaSalle, Marshall, and Woodford counties, to work with victims and emergency personnel. Ameren, Illinois, reported about 7 p.m. Wednesday that it had completed restoring power to 43,000 customers, mostly in the Ottawa and Carbondale areas. The next story is headlined, Win-Win for ISU Nursing Students Schools, by Lenore Sabota. Normal. Fewer youngsters are acutely ill these days. Even when they are, most don't spend long periods in hospitals. That's good, of course, but it makes it difficult for nursing students to gain clinical experience in pediatrics. Illinois State University's Mennonite College of Nursing found a solution that not only benefits its students, it benefits K-12 schools in the area. Instead of doing their clinicals at a hospital, nursing students get pediatric and public health clinical experience working with school nurses in 7 school districts, including District 87 and Unit 5. Nursing students get to see children in different developmental stages, create health promotion projects, and gain insight into challenges facing children with chronic conditions such as diabetes, sickle cell anemia, and seizure disorders. It's a win-win for everybody concerned, said Susie Markham, a school nurse in Normal-based Unit 5. About 20% of students in regular classrooms have a chronic illness. Called the America's Promise School Project, the initiative receives funding from State Farm Companies Foundation. Students spend one day a week at their assigned school, the same as if they were in a hospital, explained Carla Pohl, assistant professor of nursing and project director. She said 76 nursing students are taking part this semester. Senior Stephanie Guerra of Homer Glen said, "You don't realize how big of a role the school nurse plays in emergency planning." As if on cue, an interview with the nursing students is interrupted when a teacher enters the Fairview Elementary School nurse's office with a young girl with a bloody nose from a collision in gym class. Markham, as school nurse, takes the lead, but the nursing students also pitch in, calming the teary-eyed girl. Unplanned experiences like that, plus working with youngsters in the classroom and through a home outreach visit, set the program apart. Senior Ezgi Bassar of Naperville said she likes that the program lets us focus on preventative care more. For example, first graders at Fairview brush their teeth in class after lunch. Each has a separate compartment next to a sink in the classroom with their own toothbrush and toothpaste. Buying those supplies is part of where the funding goes. As the nursing students taught the youngsters about proper brushing using toothy stuffed animals, they asked and answered questions. When one child mentioned her grandmother had fake teeth, senior Zach Taylor of Bloomington asked, "Do you know what a full set of fake teeth is called?" "Wooden teeth," another youngster answered enthusiastically, just days after George Washington's birthday was celebrated. The nursing students and other adults in the room did a good job of not laughing, and instead, Taylor noted that yes, wooden teeth were used in the past, but now people use something called dentures that are made of a much nicer material. Learning to talk to youngsters in easily understood words is an important part of the pediatric clinical experience, said Pohl. "I like interacting with the kids," said Maria Romero, a senior from Warrenville. "It's something very different from the clinical setting. We get to follow them a full year." Each nursing student in the project is assigned a young student with a chronic illness whose family agrees to be part of the project. The nursing student meets with the family at their home and helps develop a plan of care, said Pohl. You try to get a holistic understanding. What sort of routines the family has incorporated into their day to manage the disease, said Taylor. The family was very gracious and willing to teach me a little bit about the illness. Pohl and Mary Cranston, clinical course leader for the project and an instructional assistant professor, presented information about the program to members of the ISU Board of Trustees earlier this year. Cranston commended the nursing faculty's willingness to develop new ways to teach clinicals. With innovation, we grow, we learn, and we learn new skills, she said. The core of nursing is caring about others. The next article is entitled, Normal Decries Tax Share Deal End. Town, Bloomington Untrustworthy Ally. By Derek Bay. Normal officials slammed the City of Bloomington's decision to leave a tax-sharing agreement with the town, saying Wednesday it sends a clear message that Bloomington considers itself our competitor, not our partner. The termination of the Metrozone agreement joins a growing list of behaviors by the city that are not neighborly or collaborative, and in many cases are adversarial, according to a statement from Normal Mayor Chris Coos and the Normal City Council. In response, Normal officials intend to pursue our options to protect our 30-year investment in the Metro Zone Economic Development Area and ensure that the interests of the town are served in the dissolution of the Metro Zone, particularly the preservation of revenue sources to which the town believes it remains legally entitled. The Bloomington City Council voted 7-2 Monday to terminate the zone, which was created in 1986 to share the infrastructure and service expenses and net tax revenue, excluding motel hotel taxes and water fees, for a west side commercial and industrial area. The zone stretched from Walmart on Market Street in Bloomington to the Crossroads Center and what is now the Rivian Automotive Plant in Normal. City officials said the city paid Normal $12 million and received about $5 million in return over the life of the Metro Zone, and they said the city currently was paying Normal a net $1.2 million a year. The town also will review all intergovernmental agreements with the City of Bloomington and review our participation in community efforts calling for collaboration with the city, in part to make up the lost revenue, according to the statement. When asked if litigation is an option the town might consider, Coos said Wednesday, "We're going to be deliberative on our process on this and look at all our options." He had ruled out the possibility last week. Normal City Manager Mark Peterson said the town has 48 intergovernmental agreements with the city. Coos said mutual aid, which allows police and fire personnel from each city to respond to calls in the other, is not in danger. We now recognize involvement with a demonstrably untrustworthy partner, such as the City of Bloomington, may represent an undue financial risk, according to the statement. The statement referred to the city's offer to continue collaborating on economic development after pulling out of the Metro Zone as hollow and disingenuous. It's like a spouse saying, "I want a divorce, I don't want to talk about it, and I'm keeping all the assets, but are you available next week for dinner and a movie?" Coos said. The statement lists among bad behaviors by the city use of lucrative incentives to lure businesses from Normal to Bloomington, unwillingness to even discuss collaborative ventures, and unilaterally withdrawing from other intergovernmental partnerships that resulted in a severe financial hardship to the town. Bloomington offered tax incentives that helped Dick's Sporting Goods and Kroger decide to move from Normal to Bloomington. Bloomington officials voted last year to not even discuss sharing sales tax revenue between communities. and the city left METCOM, the countywide emergency dispatch center, in similar fashion years ago. Peterson said the METCOM decision, which was also without notice and without discussion, was very costly to the county and the town, as well as the city. Coos said normal officials look forward to discussing the issue in an open city council session. Bloomington City Council discussed the zone in executive session on February 20th, labeled Probable Litigation, and the decision was made in open session Monday with little discussion. Everything they did was behind closed doors, Coos said. Citizens need to hear about this. Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner responded that issuing a statement like this is bad for the entire community. It's hard to believe that a difference of opinion on a single issue would threaten everything that we have achieved together, he told the Pantograph. Of Normal's promise to review intergovernmental agreements, Renner said, "We don't know what that means. It seems as if it's a threat." He said some agreements, including funding for community mental health needs and Connect Transit, are critical intergovernmental agreements, and those should not go by the wayside. The city also provides water service to the Rivian plant, he added. We will stand by our commitments. At the end of the day, in the city of Bloomington, we continue to look forward to working with Normal on a broad range of mutual problems, he said. Our door is always open at our end. I think the ball is in their court. Normal City Council member Kathleen Lawrence said she looks forward to speaking more about the issue at Monday's City Council meeting. I would encourage everyone to listen in, including our colleagues in the Bloomington leadership, she said. Here's a story entitled, Labor Issues Get Candidates Support, by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. Candidates for mayor and city council seats in Bloomington and Normal, Normal Township Supervisor, the local school boards, and the Heartland Community College Board expressed support for public employee collective bargaining, prevailing wage laws, and project labor agreements at a forum Wednesday night at the Laborers International Local 362 Hall. Nearly every candidate for the city offices cited economic development as a vital issue that their city should work on. Nine candidates for the April 4th elections missed the forum, and three who were unable to attend sent written responses to questions that had been provided in advance. Each of the 29 candidates who spoke was given 3 minutes for their presentation. About 75 people attended the two-hour event. Several candidates took the opportunity to talk about their own experiences, either growing up in a family with union workers or being union members themselves at some point. Gary Lambert, one of four candidates for alderman in Bloomington's Ward 3, was the only candidate to express some reservations about public employee collective bargaining. Instead, Lambert replied, "Yes and no," saying without elaboration, "We're getting to a position that's not sustainable." Incumbent Ward 3 Alderman Nkoka Mwambe said he supported public collective bargaining unequivocally. The other two Ward 3 candidates, Jay Balmer and Bob Clay, were not present. All candidates who spoke supported project labor agreements. These are agreements between a government unit and local construction unit on a specific project that states all workers will come through local union hiring halls, and the unions agree there will be no disputes. Normal Mayor Chris Coos said such agreements are an efficient way to do large projects, noting that one was used with the construction of Uptown Station. His challenger in the mayoral race, Mark Tiritelli, also expressed support for such agreements, saying, "I truly believe that the union workers are the highest skilled." Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner said growing the local economy and promoting economic development are absolutely critical in Bloomington. He and Ward 1 Alderman Kevin Lower won Tuesday's primary to advance to the April 4th vote for mayor, but Lower sent a message saying he was detained at work and could not attend. School board candidates expressed opposition to privatizing schools. In the only partisan election, Republican Cheryl Gaines is facing Democrat Sarah Grammer for Normal Township Supervisor. Gaines said the Activity and Recreation Center, which is aimed at senior citizens, is a vital program that needs to be retained. She said seniors who are isolated tend to get depressed and their health deteriorates. The next story is entitled, IWU Center to Aid Small Business Development, by Lenore Sabota. Bloomington. A new small business development center will open at Illinois Wesleyan University at the end of the month, filling a gap for would-be entrepreneurs and small businesses seeking to grow. Karen Busoni, a visiting assistant professor of business administration, will lead the center, to be located on the third floor of IWU's State Farm Hall, the university announced Wednesday. It will open March 27th, 9 months after a similar center closed at Illinois State University. Among services the center will provide are assistance with business plan development, financial packaging, exporting and importing support, disaster recovery, customer research assistance, and healthcare guidance. Charlie Moore, CEO of the McLean County Chamber of Commerce, called the center crucial to the community. In addition to helping entrepreneurs get started, Moore said, it will be a resource for businesses who are here and they want to grow, but they don't know how. Busoni has been teaching at IWU for 9 years and has 21 years of experience in marketing, strategic leadership, manufacturing operations, and distribution at Kellogg's, Kraft Foods, and Dot Foods. She envisions students being involved with projects and internships through the center. Among the courses she has taught are business administration, financial management, and entrepreneurship. That entrepreneurial spirit is so intriguing, and it's alive and well in this community, said Busoni. She has been in contact with the leaders at the Small Business Development Centers at Bradley University in Peoria, Lincoln Land Community College in Springfield, and in Champaign. She expects to turn to them if expertise is needed that is not available locally. The center's hours will be 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Although the center isn't officially open yet, Busoni said people can contact her at kbusoni@iwu.edu. ISU closed its center at the end of June after being told it would receive no more money until the state had a budget. Here's a story entitled, Program by for Students. Officials pleased with BHS-piloted Student Promise Council, by Julia Evelsizer. Bloomington. A program usually managed by adults to help meet students' personal and academic needs is being steered by a group of passionate students at Bloomington High School to offer support to their teenage peers. BHS was selected as the first Bloomington Normal High School to pilot a student-led Promise Council, and school officials say they are blown away by the students' dedication. Other Promise Councils are driven by adults in the community, and the student needs are perceived by adults. This student-led group is facilitating meetings, spearheading ideas, and organizing outreach, said Mary Yount, District 87 school board member and mentor for the BHS Council. The Promise Council concept began in 2008 as a group of local adults who offer support and resources to elementary and junior high students in several McLean County Unit 5 and District 87 schools. Even as a teacher in the classroom, I don't always see what's going on with kids, said Amanda Holloway-Jernt, English teacher and Promise Council mentor. They see things we don't on a daily basis. They're in the trenches. Since the high school group of 11 was organized in 2016, the students have formed several new school resources. Through a shout-out list, students in need of items like new shoes or baby supplies can contact an adult willing to help acquire the item. The group also formed the Raider Resource Room in the high school, stocked with food, clothing, school supplies, and toiletries. The council is also forming a tutoring group by and for students. This really gives them an opportunity to develop leadership skills and make a difference, said Mary Applington, District 87 counselor and Promise Council member. It's important that's not just offered as an incidental, but really part of the system. The student group meets twice a month, usually with adults present, to spur ideas and offer outside resources. Senior Alicia Notkami said she joined the group because she noticed some students face more disparities than others, and she found it unfair. Promise Council has provided ways to take action. When students are interested in students, there's a bigger and better output, said Notkami. Junior Amber Hill said high school councils are needed because teens can have more issues than younger children. High schoolers are very, very hormonal. They get jobs. They have relationship issues, said Hill. And on top of all that, this is the time they start deciding their own futures, and that's difficult. They need the support and somebody to go to. BHS Principal Tim Moore said he is most excited about the student-led tutoring efforts. It's very powerful that classmates can support one another and check in on each other, said Moore. And here is a public safety item about marijuana. An Oklahoma woman was sentenced to 7 years in prison Wednesday for possession of marijuana in connection with an August traffic stop where police found 49 pounds in a vehicle. Willisha Smith, 37, pleaded guilty to the drug offense in exchange for dismissal of a more serious marijuana delivery charge. Smith and Latoya Tyson, also 37, of Oklahoma, were stopped by McLean County Deputy John Albee on Interstate 55 for a defective windshield. A prosecutor told a judge at Smith's plea hearing that the defendant claimed she found the marijuana in an alley in Chicago. The plea agreement includes a $100,000 street value fine, an amount that represents about half the value of the drugs, according to the state. Charges are pending against Tyson. And here's an item from the area calendar for today. League of Women Voters of McLean County WGLT Candidate Forum, 6 p.m. Thursday, ISU University Galleries, normal mayoral candidates. And here's a road closure notice, Grove Street, Bloomington. Grove Street between McLean and Evans Street is closed to through traffic for emergency sewer repair. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for March 2nd. Please stay tuned.